everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Introvert Ally. Our guest today, Gwen Acton, PhD, and I had a very interesting conversation about scientists, technology folks, and how important it is to develop their leadership skills, and how often, as we often know, the folks in that arena get promoted, but aren't equipped or don't have the education or insights into how to really get the best out of their people. So Gwen saw a need in that area, and I think you're going to find her references to research about that particular audience and also her approach, very cutting edge approaches in terms of using AI, et cetera, to really give scientists, engineers, and those in that arena the tools that they need and to learn in the way they learn best. So I really enjoyed my conversation. I will say that Gwen and I met randomly through at a professional association. I guess it wasn't so randomly, but we hit it off right away and saw the synergy between the work we were doing with the common technology, science, engineering audience that we have. So a little bit about Gwen. She is a PhD scientist, as I mentioned, and went to MIT, worked in a Nobel Prize winning lab. She's really an expert in the intersection of science and business. Her company is called the Vivo Group. It's a consulting firm that improves productivity and innovation in life science and technology companies. She also had numerous articles written. Her last book was called The Bluffer's Guide to Genetics, which I love the title of. And then her current book is Leadership for Scientists and Engineers, very practical advice for what that group can do and take with them to use in the workplace. So without further ado, let me introduce you to my new friend and colleague, Dr. Gwen Acton. Welcome, Gwen Acton, PhD. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jennifer?
Well, great. I'm looking at you on your background, and it looks like there's a picture of Boston there. Is that how you say it, Boston? I'm a New Yorker, so I don't say it that way originally, but are you from there?
No, I'm originally from Philadelphia, but I have lived up here for a long time. I'm about 20 miles west of Boston, but I really like the Boston skyline. So sometimes I put that up. It's the Boston community that we're part of.
Yes. Yes. You've been there a long time. So that's great. Well, I'm very excited to talk to you today because, you know, I have a warm place in my heart for women who've come up through technology and, you know, doing all kinds of different things with that. And I think there's a lot of courage that it takes. And I know you're, as you say, tell the audience, would you say you identify as more of a introvert, extrovert? I'm sure you've taken the test before in your career.
Yeah, I am basically pretty much right in the middle, maybe a touch on the extroverted side, but all of those tests put me pretty much right in between. And I definitely feel if I don't get alone quiet time to think about things, I need that alone quiet time. But if I can't talk to people about ideas and get energized by ideas, then I also get stuck. So I need both.
Yes, you need both. And most people actually do. It sounds somewhat in your description that you might be more on the introverted side just because you talked also earlier to me about conferences really draining you, not stimulating you, right? So it could be. And you know, it's however you feel you fall on the spectrum is not a problem. We're not trying to pigeonhole anybody. But I am interested in finding out more about sort of your role as being a supporter of people in technology, because I think you might know, we may have shared this with each other, that I came to this work, not only just from being married to an introvert for many years, but most of my clients were coming from technology. And I wonder what you have seen in your world of working in science, and maybe tell us a little bit about how personality has come into it. How have you looked at that introversion, extroversion in your own career, Gwen?
So first of all, when I was in high school, I was myself very, very shy. And I remember that one of the ways for me personally that I was able to grow was I read the book in high school, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And one of the big suggestions that I got out of that book was asking other people questions. And it had never occurred to me, and it talked about how people basically want to talk about themselves. And it had never occurred to me, I think, the introverted, shy side of people, we think that everyone's looking at us and paying attention to us. And that book was really reassuring that no, they were primarily thinking about themselves, not me. And that was incredibly helpful to me, and the tool of asking questions. And to this day, I tend to ask a lot of questions because it's a way of not having to answer those questions myself. If I'm asking somebody else's question, then I don't have to answer those questions myself. So with that said, you asked about my background in technology. So I did my PhD in biology at MIT, and I have worked for the last 15 years. I have done leadership training for folks working in the science and technology industries. And one of the things people often say is that scientists and especially engineers are introverts. The research I've seen, surprisingly, interestingly, doesn't say that. The research I've seen says that scientists and engineers are actually pretty representative of the entire population. But what I have experienced myself and what I have seen from working with a lot of folks in our industry is that it depends on the content. So if we are in conversation around something technical, something we're interested in, then we tend to be very energized by that. If you watch a bunch of scientists, I mean, scientists work in groups, engineers work in groups, they rarely work by themselves. So it's that energy of working with each other that is incredibly important. But where technically trained folks do tend to be different, where scientists and engineers in particular do tend to be different around personality traits, is thinking versus feeling. The TF on the Myers-Briggs. And that might overlap with, I'm not an expert in personalities, but at least from what I have observed, that if there's too much of the feeling stuff going around, that we get overwhelmed because it's not how our brains work. So if there's a lot of people just really focusing on the feelings, then sometimes we can appear to be introverts or we can appear to be shy, because it's just a whole topic and a whole range of things that we're not really drawn to. But if it is a conversation or a group talking about technical topics, and scientists and engineers go to big conferences, scientists and engineers have lots of conversations at those conferences. So I really think in a lot of ways that what might appear sometimes to be introverted often has to do with other issues overlapping that it could make it hard for us to have conversations around things that are not just emotional or things that just are really outside of our domain, things we're not interested in. Because I think, again, people who are technically trained, we tend to be very focused. In order to do what we do, we have to be able to sort of block out a lot of other things, really have intense thought and focus. And if we aren't able to do that, then I think that sometimes that's, again, the way our brains work is to go very deep. And so sometimes if there's a lot of little chit chat, whatever, that sometimes is not, again, what we're drawn to. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Thank you so much for that perspective. And just to clarify on the T and the F for people that might not be aware of that on using the Myers-Briggs rubric, you know, it's how you make decisions, right? So it's the thinking is more the pros and cons, a very analytical, logical kind of side of ourselves. The F isn't so much about feelings, but it's about relationships and what's the impact they're going to have on this relationship. So I'm glad that you brought that up because I want to ask you about that, because one of the areas that you kind of talked about at the end of what you were sharing was that a person might be very heads down, or a team, into the technical specifications and working on a project. But yet we know the success of teams, right? And the results come just as much, I would argue, through relationships and good communication. So I think that's where we may, a lot of times introverts, I find, kind of are feel behind the eight ball. They haven't really understood how they can actually put that lens, you know, onto what they're doing or add that to the, I just wanted to throw that in there and wondered, and that kind of brings me to my next question. And that is about, you mentioned leadership, that you saw a need to kind of, or morphed into that. So I want you to tell us a little more about that, because that's kind of what I'm talking about. The other side of science and engineering technology is actually getting things done, right? And not just working on the projects, but also working through people. So talk about how you made that journey from, you know, being a PhD MIT scientist, which, by the way, is a great calling card when you're trying to get work, right? Gives you a little great branding, too, in addition to having been achieving a lot. But that said, Tell me how you made that transition into actually leadership and then teaching leadership.
Yeah, before we do that, I just want to go back to something you said, Jennifer, because I think it's incredibly important. You were talking about teams, and it is not just the technical expertise. People, as I mentioned before, science and technology and engineering are not taking place in just with folks sitting in a room by themselves. There's, as you mentioned, communication. There's a tremendous amount of communication. There's a tremendous amount of teamwork that goes into successful science, engineering, and technology. And there's hard research showing that there's a famous experiment where you put the smartest folks, you go to a company to put the smartest folks into a group, into an engineering company. And then you compare those, and you call those the alpha team. And you compare those smartest folks, then you build other teams with other folks from the company. And perhaps not surprisingly to most folks, those smartest folks do not necessarily have the best results. Even though you put those smartest people in the room together, because if they are competing with each other, if they're, as you mentioned, sharing ideas, if they're not sharing ideas, if they are shutting down ideas, et cetera, they can underperform the other groups. So to have successful science and technology, you mentioned communication, having that teamwork together, having all of those interactions be successful is extraordinarily important. So that you asked, how did I get into the leadership piece? And it was really seeing that need for leadership that I am still a scientist at heart. To get the best science and technology, we need to have good leadership. Because without good leadership, you don't have good teams, you don't have good innovation. So we really need to have those leadership skills in order to do that well. So for example, let's just look at one example of how important leadership can be. Let's say somebody's doing some science or technology work and they aren't doing it well. And so they are slowing everything down because they're not, you know, behind in their deadlines, let's say. And if nobody gives them feedback, if nobody holds them accountable, that will never be fixed. And you're going to have subpar performance simply because they haven't gotten any feedback. And it's a human being, at least now, we were talking about AI a few minutes ago before we started recording, maybe in the future it will be AI, but now, as of right now, it is human beings giving other human beings that feedback. And you mentioned before the introvert extrovert bit, it does take, and you mentioned the word courage earlier, it does take a leader that willingness to have that difficult conversation. When, and I would argue there's all sorts of tools to make it less difficult, but in their minds or in the way we often think about it, that leader needs to have that conversation with that report or else that performance will never be improved. And as I alluded to, I think there are many, many tools. Just like when I read How to Win Friends and Influence People, I think there are some incredibly helpful tools that we can have that will improve regardless of what our innate skills are to begin with, that allow us to function more effectively in both regular life and at work by those tools. So that's why I'm so intrigued by leadership, because leaders have so much impact on the success. Their senior leaders set the direction of their organizations, and the frontline managers directly impact the experience of their reports. 70% of somebody's experience in an organization has to do with their direct manager. So incredibly important roles in the organization, and done well, I think not only do you get higher performance and productivity, but you get more motivated and inspired employees as well. So that's why I think it's so important.
I can hear your passion about leadership, and I also hear the logical side of how it makes the difference. It makes or breaks teams. That's quite interesting research that you shared. Maybe hopefully we can put a couple of the links in the show notes so that people can refer back to that. And I totally agree with you that the science and technology engineering folks are very prone to grab on to tools. just show me a system, right? Take me through the steps of what I can say and don't say. And one of the things you shared with me is that you have developed, you have been using AI in an effective way, or beginning to do it more effectively, and for being an early adopter in this, in terms of maybe you can share with the audience how your, you know, AI is coming into helping you or helping leaders do exactly what you were saying, ramp up the skills of their folks and giving them feedback and that kind of thing.
AI obviously has lots of potentials in lots of different aspects. I think it has many applications in helping our leaders to do a better job. There are the ones that are out there that are already being employed, which are around being able to look up information, being able to draft things. I think anybody who's played with ChatGPT knows you can ask ChatGPT how to say, how to frame something, help with writing an email, that kind of thing, reminders, that kind of thing. What the tool that I am developing is allows managers, and actually we have it and we're rolling it out, allows managers to practice conversations with a report in real time. So the AI not just will actually speak back to you. You have a employee, the one we're working with right now, it's an AI generated James. And so James, you will talk to James and tell, you know, James will talk to you. You will talk to James, and the lag is, you're actually having there's not a lag. You're having a real-time conversation with an employee. And it's so powerful because a lot of these skills, leadership skills, for example, they're like, give your feedback to your employees, right? Which is true. I was just talking about how important that was. And they'll even give you some frameworks for that. And you're right. Scientists and engineers, those working in science and technology, are very used to following protocols. We were trained how to answer problems. We were trained that things had to be precise. And that's a way we have of learning. So when somebody gives us concrete tools, it's really helpful for us. Like how to do this, how to do that, like some very specific suggestions is very helpful. So the conversation tool that we have allows managers to practice those conversations. And since you're the focus that you have on introverts, I think it's actually especially helpful. Well, it's helpful to different introverts and extroverts in different ways. But for introverts, I think it can be especially helpful because they can, in the privacy of their computer, practice these conversations. You get feedback. The AI gives you feedback on what you did well, what you didn't do well, and lets you try it again. And it gives you a score, and you get to keep working on it until you increase that score. And you can do it, again, in the privacy of you and your computer without having to feel like before you go and talk to a person. And I think that whole idea of practice, I was reading something recently where they made the analogy, like, can you imagine professional athletes not warming up before a game? Not practicing before a game. Can you imagine, like, you throw somebody into a football game who's never, or a soccer, you know, whatever game, who's never, you know, had any practice? And that would be crazy. And yet we do this all the time in the workplace, I think partly because up till now, we haven't really had very effective ways of practicing in a way that would allow somebody to get feedback. And in a way that didn't necessarily risk, you know, harming somebody, or you didn't have to go and ask somebody, oh, can I practice this with you? So I think this is going to be a game changer. I think in a few years, we're going to be doing all sorts of practice conversations.
Well, you and I have both done leadership training. And so we know the power of that when you can get a group who's trust each other. That was a luxury, you know, having 3 to 5 day leadership training classes where we would spend a whole afternoon on feedback and people would practice in a safe environment. But this sounds even more powerful because, as you say, it takes away some of the risk factor. Can you take us behind the scenes a little bit with how you created this tool?
Well, let me just follow up on one thing you just say, taking the risk out. So one of the places that there is some data around how helpful conversations can be, it's much easier to measure sales, right? So whether somebody's successful as a salesperson. And the data says that if salespeople practice sales conversations 30 to 50 times before going out and meeting with clients, they will sell three times more than they would have. Now, obviously, leadership is different, but that's an easily measurable example where we can see that practicing these conversations can make it much more effective. And one of the things that has just been really, AI is so powerful that when you're having these conversations, it's not like it has a pre-recorded set of responses. You can, in that conversation, it will flex to whatever you're saying to it. It's like you're talking to a person because they are responding to what the content of what you are saying. And there are new tools that are being rolled out that can be able to evaluate your tone as well. So not just what you're saying, but your tone as well, which for many folks who may not necessarily realize that they're using a tone, like I see this a lot in science and technology, someone says, well, what do you mean you don't know that already? You know, and at one level, they don't realize how they're coming across, especially as leaders. If they say that, they don't realize how that can be heard by the other person because they just mean it honestly, like, you know, why are you saying that? But how they say it has more of an impact than they might want it to have. And this can help, these tools can help make them more aware of that.
And so you actually, behind the scenes again, you came and used your content then in developing this, or how did you working, I know, with another company?
So there's many AI tools out there, and I'm using some AI tools that are designed specifically for conversation. Now, I think a lot of AI, and I think anybody who's played around with AI, it's a great example of garbage in and garbage out. So if you don't already really have a deep understanding of what's important in leadership or what some of the situations are, the challenging situations, then I think that it's going to be much harder to use this kind of technology. What you want to have is obviously a system that can support it. But also, as you just said, and you also do leadership development, it is so important what examples you give, what tools you give, how you're measuring what people are doing. So for example, the demo we have right now, one of our first demos involves active listening. And so the AI will evaluate, did you ask questions? Did you reflect back what they said? Were you showing that you were listening? Did you jump to conclusions? And it's able to actually evaluate that again, it basically in real time. And so you can get immediate feedback on how things are going. So yes, it absolutely, you can design what criteria you are evaluating and expecting the manager to use. And I think that's really key because there are different frameworks for how to do, you know, if you look at, for example, giving feedback, there are many different frameworks for giving feedback. And so you want it designed for the organization, what sort of practices. There's different styles of leadership. You want this designed so that it reinforces what is helpful and important to the organization. And again, because we're talking, you know, your specialty is introverts. I think this can be especially helpful for introverts who don't have to go and ask somebody, right? They can just practice on their own and perfect it before going to talk to somebody.
Oh, totally, totally. And, you know, we didn't talk about any of your prior work with the human genome and all of that. So have you basically, do you do any more science at all? I mean, do any hands-on science, or you've moved on from research in that way?
So my first book was The Bluffer's Guide to Genetics. And that was a humorous guide to how to have a conversation in genetics. It was the Bluffer series. And the idea was, if you're bluffing your way, you have to learn enough to bluff your way.
Yes, and true. So, a little bit about a lot, right?
Yeah. And so that, I still think like a scientist, but I'm not doing experiments on a bench. I think that most science takes place in the context of a leadership context, even in academia. You have the professor who tends to oversee the group that they are working with, or they are the, you know, professor or the principal investigator. So either you are that person in charge of research, or you are working with that person who Now, are they going to tell you everything you're going to do? No. But do they control a lot of access to resources, visibility, how much they're helping and coaching you? So again, I feel like I'm still very much at heart a scientist, but I feel like these leadership practices are vital, crucial for effective science and technology.
Yeah. And your new book, Leadership for Scientists and Engineers, just can you give us the big idea of that book? What is it you are hoping people will take away from it?
So when I wrote this, this book is based on the work I've done for the last 15 years working with over 5,000 different science and technology and engineering leaders. So I've had a lot of experience with what works with them and what doesn't. And so this book is really designed, really, really wanted a book to help if you are a leader or manager working in science or technology, that it would give you this fundamental understanding of what it means to be a leader and to embrace what it is so that you can be a better leader and manager. So one of the things, there are some very common mistakes that leaders often make. And if we can prevent those, I think not only is it good for the organization, but it's also good for the leader or manager who's not, you know, they don't realize they're making this mistake because it's a blind spot. And it's also good for the reports. You hear a lot of stories from folks about the really dumb things or annoying things or frustrating things that their leaders or managers do. And one of the questions I ask when I'm working with leaders and managers is like, well, if it's so obvious that this is not a good thing to do, why do you think they're doing it? Right? So like a classic example is, somebody asks you to do something, but doesn't tell you why. So you're like, you're really not sure why you're supposed to do it. And that means you can't do as good a job. It's not as fun to do it. And so, you know, the question is, well, why didn't they just tell you the why? You know, and it's basically they just forgot. They thought you knew, right? It's very easy for, you know, especially leaders and managers are hearing things ahead of their reports. And so it's very easy for them just to forget. Or I gave the example earlier of the tone of voice, right? Not realizing if you say, well, you should know that already, not realizing the message that a report might get from that.
Well, I can't wait to read it. It sounds very accessible. And who would you say would be the audience that you're aiming for? You mentioned scientists and engineers, any particular level, or who do you hope this will hit?
So I think I've had folks from all levels read this book. I've had the more experienced ones say, basically, they're really excited because they want to give it to other people. And they've told me, I wish I'd had this earlier in my career, definitely for new leaders and managers. But I'm also really, there are questions at the end of each chapter, also for senior leaders in organizations so that they can best help and support the scientists and engineer leaders in their organizations. Because most scientists and engineers get promoted into these positions based on their technical ability. You asked before what's different about this book, and that's a big piece of it, is that scientists and engineers get experts, technical experts, that get promoted into these positions. We talked about the thinking feeling bit, the relationship bit, based on their technical thinking aspect. And then they're in these positions and all of a sudden relationships, regardless of whether you want them to or not, end up, because we are human beings, we are not computers, and we have brains that were evolved by evolution. And so you end up having these relationships that impact things. And so my goal in this book is to write it in a way, or that this book is accessible to science, the way scientists and engineers think about things, and allows them to have tools to make them even better and more motivating and inspiring when they are leaders, at least, or, and I think I put this somewhere in the book, at least not to hate it as much. Because many scientists and engineers are reluctant leaders. They weren't necessarily looking to do this, but here they are in these positions. And it's a very important one with important responsibilities.
It sounds like another book title, The Reluctant Leader, right? And it's also, as you really inferred, it's bringing out the best in everybody on your team. So introverts, extroverts, ambiverts. You know, if you're a good leader, you can do that. And I think, as you mentioned, people are not meaning to be jerks, as we as we call them when they're bad bosses, but they just are walking around unconscious sometimes of what they need to be doing. And if your book is anything the way you're expressing yourself on this podcast, I'm sure it's going to be a great read. I can't wait.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. And by the time this podcast comes out, I think the book will already be available on Amazon, Leadership for Scientists and Engineers, like When Acton PhD. So please look it up and if it's of interest to you. I will just add, since your focus is on personalities, there is a chapter when I'm doing leadership training, the tool I use is DISC because it has four types. And I think for leaders and managers, it's a little bit easier to use on a day-to-day basis. And so there is a chapter in the book on DISC personalities, and every name in the book has the designation. The first letter of that name is representative of that person's DISC type. So for example, if it is a Dave, that person will be characteristic of a D dominant DISC type. And so I assume, you know, just to, you know, remind everyone, DISC is the four types, and it dominant and influential, steadiness and conscientiousness. And I think it's a helpful tool. So I have a whole chapter on that because I agree with you. It can be extraordinarily helpful to be aware of the different styles others have in the workplace.
Well, Gwen, you have tapped into a real need here, and your background and experience not only gives you credibility, but also helps you to figure out where the need is, where the pain is, so that you can address that. And I love the way you are staying ahead of the curve with using AI tools to supplement your work. And you sound so excited about it. So I'm excited for you and for our audience to check you out. So what's the best way for people to connect with you, Gwen?
So you can either connect with me through LinkedIn, just Gwen Acton PhD on LinkedIn. I'm the only Gwen Acton PhD on LinkedIn. You can find me there. Or the firm I run is Vivo Group, V as in Victor, I, V as in Victor, O, group.com. Or gwenacton.com will take you to my website as well. And I'm going to have some additional materials up there, some additional resources as well. You can try out the AI tool and see what you think about it. And I'm looking forward. And please do reach out to me if you are interested in these issues and topics. Always happy to hear from folks. And yeah, if you link into me on LinkedIn, you'll be up to date. Oh, you can also sign up for our newsletter on the vivogroup.com website. So I do hope you do reach out.
Lots of ways to interact with Dr. Gwen Acton. Gwen, I can't thank you enough. I have to tell the group, the audience out there, that, you know, you never know when you're going to have an extemporaneous, spontaneous conversation with someone. Gwen and I actually met on the security line, the airport. And we're Minneapolis, coming back from a conference, and we hit it off. And I was so thrilled that she agreed to connect on the podcast today. And I know that you all are going to check out her work and really learn so much from her. So thank you again, Gwen. It's really been a pleasure to have you on the Introvert Ally today.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. It's been great to be here with you today.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you found value, please do share it with others and consider a review on Apple Podcasts. You can visit me at jenniferkonweiler.com to learn more about our virtual and our live keynotes. I'm also excited to announce that the new third edition of The Introverted Leader, Building on Your Quiet Strength, is available for pre-order now at Amazon, at bookshop.org, and at other outlets where you get books. Consider becoming part of our launch team. We're going to be giving away some good goodies there for those people who do contribute. And it may just be writing reviews to be part of the team. So we hope we can gather a community of supporters. The new book is full of introvert-focused strategies for the hybrid workplace. Thank you. And I hope to see you next time for more intriguing conversations with introvert allies.